Welcome back to the CCWSA podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City.
I'm his partner in crime, Stan Campbell.
I guess we don't have to say in Oklahoma City.
I don't. You really don't. We're always here.
We're always here. Well, we're going to be here for a while because we're probably not going to be traveling anywhere. But yeah. So we might do someone from a remote location someday. But no travel for you.
Bullcrap.
For anyone. And we have Don West here.
Yes.
Don West.
The Don.
Good to be back. I took a little ride up to Oklahoma City.
How was it?
Good. I was actually surprised there was as much traffic as there was.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, really surprised. I thought it would be sparse, and it wasn't. So that was an encouraging sign, I thought.
Are you just not bringing your Tesla up because you're just hiding it from me? So the Tesla's going to drive up and pick them up. I can hear about all the cool things, but I just can't see it. I can't have the experience.
Next time, we'll ride up with that.
I went down there. Oh, it was a few months back, and he just purchased a Tesla, and so we were having dinner, and he was like, "Hey, Stan, I'm gonna show you something." He pulled up his app, and he calls his car. So I said, "Oh, you got a new Tesla?" He said, "Yeah." So it pulls out. You know, he says, "It's gonna come pick me up." Goes out, and it goes to the stop sign, and all of a sudden, the car got confused, and it just started doing whatever it wanted to do. And Don's like, well, wait, this is not right. Well, it wasn't cool. It wasn't a cool example of how the car works, but it was funny
to me.
Was
it like a Herbie Lovebug, doors start flapping open and bouncing around?
I want one, but after they get that bug fixed.
Have they got that fixed, Don?
You know, that's the summon feature. Where you can actually make it go forward or backward, in and out of the driveway, the garage. I think that's how it started. But now it's enhanced that you can be in a parking lot within a few hundred feet. And if it works correctly, it'll pull out of the parking place and come right where you're standing. If it doesn't work properly, then it heads off the other direction and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
Well,
I tell you, there's been some funny looks, though, when I've done it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Seen people looking at me with this control of some sort, and then looking at the car and not seeing a driver.
Oh, that's cool.
Or I still have the sunshade, you know, because it actually works quite well. I love that car.
Yeah. That's cool. That's awesome. Great. Well, I'm still thinking about the Cybertruck if that ever comes to fruition. But I guess we're going to be talking today about kind of that same thing. When things work right, they work right, but when they don't, all hell breaks loose.
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of that right now.
Yeah, so Stan, what do you want to kick it off with?
Well, I want to introduce, you know, Don into the conversation immediately because, you know, right now, today, there's stuff going on nationwide, you know, reference to protest, rioting, looting, and just some bad actors out there that are really wreaking havoc across the nation. And, you know, we received a lot of concern emails and phone calls from our members and followers in reference to, you know, hey, what do I do, you know, if I have to protect my property, for instance? Mm-hmm. And I mean, and there's going to be several parts of this discussion that we're going to get into, but I want to start, Don, there with a serious discussion about, you know, what do I do? You know, what's my rights? You know, what does the law state if I want to protect my property with my gun?
There's only one place in the United States that I'm aware of where there, under some circumstances, you can use deadly force to protect property. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhat subjective, somewhat objective. And my suggestion is, even if there is a way to legally do it, it's a bad idea. Otherwise, everywhere else, probably even under virtually every situation in Texas, you don't do it. You simply don't use deadly force to protect personal property. If you do, you're committing a crime, and a serious crime, and you could wind up going to prison for a long, long time.
That's right. And, you know, I wanted Don to hit this home, and we'll say this again later, but you guys that are following us, you know, we always give, you know, pretty sound advice and tips, but if you do anything, especially for those that are new that have firearms, if you do anything other than training, which is important as well, you have to know the laws in your state and what you can do, where you can carry, and especially when you can use deadly force. You have to like just really pound that into your head so that you don't make any mistakes and pull yourself away from your family members by taking a life when you should not have.
Well, that's a very important point, that self-defense laws are enacted by the jurisdiction, which means every state's going to have their own set of laws, mm-hmm. when you can use deadly force, when you can't. Now, there are remarkable similarities across the country. They all require certain things now, for example, that the prosecutor has to prove you didn't act in self-defense. Mm-hmm. The proof has to be beyond a reasonable doubt, some of those things. But there can be nuances and differences as to how the law might apply to particular situations. But nowhere, with the exception of Texas, mm-hmm. and that's, a very limited mm-hmm. set of circumstances, mm-hmm. that nobody really wants to take the chance that they get it just right. Because if they don't, if they miss one part of this, then they're committing a very serious crime. They could spend the rest of their life in prison. And that means that you don't use deadly force to protect your personal property. Mm-hmm. I think that's the rule, mm-hmm. which is not to say that if you are threatened personally,
that's right.
you know, if we're talking about self-defense of a person,
that's
or
right.
a person mm-hmm. that you're there to protect,
yes.
Of course you do. You follow the law, but of course that's where the law gives you the right to respond with the use of deadly force against an imminent threat of serious bodily harm or death. And that's also across the board.
That just happened in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. There was a gun store owner. I believe it was last night it went down. 67-year-old gun store owner. They tried to break into his shop the night before. Mm-hmm. He was upstairs in his shop. Four was the last number I saw. Cut a lock on a fence, came through, he came out, challenged them, said, hey, get out of here. One of them produced a gun. He shot an AR-15, killed one, wounded another. And as of now, there's no charges. Philly,
that's awesome.
Philly investigators are still looking at it.
Well, see, in that case also, he had the support of video evidence too, correct?
No, different no? case.
Oh, different case.
That was a bar owner.
This is so many of them.
There is. There was, so far, there's three that I've been following. The initial one in Minneapolis or a pawn shop.
Was that the pawn shop?
Yeah.
And he was arrested.
He was arrested and charged with murder.
Mm-hmm.
The bar owner was released with no charge. That was the one that was on video.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Where he was jumped by three or four guys, and then a guy jumped on his back. Might have been two and one.
Went to choke him. Yeah.
Went to choke him and fired one round.
Yeah.
And he was released without charges. And as of right now, the one in Philly, there's no charges. The reporter interviewed a detective on the case and quoted the detective as saying, you know, it basically doesn't get any more legit than this. So
now what was the Minneapolis one that you're talking about?
The details on that I haven't seen. I haven't seen any video. The only thing, like, I remember the night it happened, and it was, there was just a report of a pawn shop owner shooting a looter,
mm-hmm.
and the guy was dead. Cops show up, arrest the pawn shop guy, and last I had heard, as of yesterday, he was still in jail. All this stuff changes so fast, so that could be different now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Minneapolis. I don't know if Minnesota's this way, but they were saying it's a duty to retreat state,
mm-hmm.
and that especially in Minneapolis, basically if you shoot anybody in self defense outside of your home, them coming into your home, like you're in for a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Don. Speaking of that. Because we do have a lot of new gun owners now. Jump into, or try to explain to us, you know, duty to retreat, stand your ground, different things like that.
Castle doctrine.
How all that works.
Well, Justin started it off with the idea of anywhere but your home. Of course, that's what people know as the castle doctrine is forever and ever, you have the right to use force to protect yourself within your home. You don't have the duty to retreat. It became known as the Castle Doctrine and extended from ye days of old on through statute and to the current day. What's happened, though, is over, I suppose, if we go back into the early 2000s, around 2005, I think it was, that Florida enacted its Stand Your Ground law. And what that did, the only thing that it did insofar as self-defense is that eliminated the duty to retreat if you were outside your home in a place where you had the legal right to be. Mm-hmm. So in other words, up until that point, and currently the law in Minnesota and other places was that if you are confronted with a legitimate, life-threatening attack of some sort, before you could respond with deadly force, you had to attempt to get away. Mm-hmm. If you couldn't get away safely, that changed the rule a little bit.
Absolutely.
But if you could get away, you had to do that first, and before you could respond with deadly force. So essentially what Stand Your Ground did was extend the Castle Doctrine outside the home. Mm. Some states have different versions of it, but that's really what's happened. All that has done is it's changed that one aspect of self-defense. It has not lowered the standard of what an imminent threat of great bodily harm or death is. It hasn't changed the law in any other respect other than eliminating the duty to retreat first. And as Justin pointed out, Minnesota still is a duty to retreat state. I think it might be useful to talk about the difference in some of these terms that we're hearing on the media being tossed about, that in some respects are being all lumped into one thing. Mm-hmm. The difference between a looter, maybe, or a rioter, or even an agitator. And when you hear something like looters will be shot, that creates an image, probably an image that may not be the actual image that was intended. If somebody is coming at you in your place of business, much less your home, carrying a bomb, carrying a gun, carrying a Molotov cocktail of some sort, and is getting ready to commit arson, which is a very aggravated forcible felony, threatening you, threatening the general public with that, that's different. Mm-hmm. That's different than somebody sneaking in through a broken window that somebody else smashed to grab a pair of Nikes.
And before we get there, I wanted to say one thing, because when we're talking about Stand Your Ground, and even the states that have Stand Your Ground law, it still doesn't mean that if you get in a shooting, you're going to be that you're not going to be charged. Look at the case of Stephen Maddox. Mm-hmm. He was in a Stand Your Ground state, was attacked, retreated twice, and was still charged with murder one. So even, you know, it's kind of like the self-defense immunity. You still have to go through the process.
That's right.
So it's not like, oh, okay, well, you're just, you know, you were in a self-defense shooting, you're cleared, go on your way. You're still going to have to prove that in court, and it's going to be a huge process. So I just want to say that before we get into the...
Well, that's a good thing, a good point about the duty to retreat, because the emphasis there is that the jury ultimately decides whether or not you had an opportunity to retreat and then whether or not you exercised it or failed to exercise it. So they could truly believe you were faced with a life-threatening situation, that you acted reasonably, that you acted responsibly, but then sitting in the armchair a year and a half later, they're looking at the evidence and they say, well, wait a second, there was a door you could have gone through, or there was an opportunity that you could have retreated before you used deadly force. And even though they may favor what you did in many respects, they may think that they might have under the same circumstance, if they believe that you, in a sense, violated the law because you didn't retreat, the proper legal verdict would be guilty.
That's right.
And that's a tragedy.
And then, Don, you know, like, people don't understand as well that sometimes that is a decision by your defense attorney not to push for a stand your ground type position or stance, correct?
You know, stand your ground has a negative connotation these days, I think, in the public. Part of it's because it's misunderstood and it's confused with self-defense immunity, which is a different topic. But the idea of somebody being, where it's described in the press as he stood his ground, I think that has a negative connotation in some respect, because it sounds like he killed somebody when he didn't actually have to.
Got you.
So I think as a practical matter, some lawyers, I'm one of them, that if I have the opportunity at least to de-emphasize that and say, my client didn't make a choice, and frankly, in a stand your ground scenario, you could have the choice to leave or the choice to stay and choose to stay.
Yes.
I don't want a jury thinking that way. I really wanted the jury looking at the situation as if he really had no choice. Mm-hmm. There was no safe place to go. He'd like Maddox, he'd exhausted mm-hmm. every opportunity to get away and really had no choice. And then from a trial lawyer standpoint, even in a stand your ground state, if there was a clear path of avoidance, some prosecutors will be allowed, depending on where you are, to argue to the jury that by failing to take that opportunity to get away, that was unreasonable. So they'll kind of bootstrap that in or backdoor that into an argument that it wasn't reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Can I've got something I see online since this whole thing started. It comes up more than any other situation. We've had several emails on it specifically talking about this situation. We have seen video of it multiple times all across the country while this has went on. And that is someone having their vehicle surrounded mm-hmm. and the mob tries to pull them out. And we've seen several cases where the guys have gotten pulled out and beaten. Mm-hmm. We have seen several cases where people have drove through the mob. Mm-hmm. Of those cases where people have drove through, there was one in Florida where the driver and the passenger were arrested. There was just one, I want to say in Minneapolis, where a tanker truck
yeah.
drove through a mob. The yeah. driver was not arrested.
They've also had two cops do it.
Yeah. Well, did you see the one in, it was in New York, upstate, where I shared it in the text.
Yeah.
Where who knows who it was.
Drove
it was somebody in an SUV.
Yeah.
Drove through a police line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and they are in custody. They did get them.
Yeah.
But to me, that's different, kind of, because there's really no threat of the police pulling you out and killing you.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. and kicking you to death.
Yeah.
I was actually talking about a mob had surrounded police cars.
Oh, yeah.
And were trying to do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, in New York City.
And they pushed through them.
Yeah, New York City with the gate. But going back to the question is, and I've seen this a lot, and it's people are just kind of like, what do I do? And it generally seems to come down into two camps. One is just floor it. And if you run over people, you run over people. The other is if you're surrounded and you can't move, you just start shooting until they leave you alone. and I've seen multiple people come down to those two things.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm. Or the third, I suppose, get out of the car and try to reason with them.
Yeah, that's going to end up generally.
Well, you know, so you're trapped. You're talking about a situation where you're trapped.
Yeah. It comes down mm-hmm. to, Justin, because, I don't think anybody here is going to say mow over people or shoot everybody up. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to do that. You know, it comes down to each of us individually who carry and all of you who carry. No one can actually tell you when your life is in danger, right? You know, it's in that instant, that moment. It's your decision to decide, you know, how long do I wait? Like when I talk about mm-hmm. 3,000 times I pulled my gun on people, and that's for real numbers, and mm-hmm. 700 drug raids. Michael, we had the same time when we went to the same academy. He, out of the two of us, is the only one that shot anyone. I've had the opportunity to pull my trigger 10 times. I had my finger on the trigger. And just at the last moment, that person believed me or looked in my eyes when I said, I'm about to take you out. Drop the gun, and they drop it. And I don't shoot and kill them. But I waited that moment. Did I have to? No. I, too, myself and another officer got attacked in Bricktown here in Oklahoma City by what everybody's calling small agents, but it was eight of them. And they tried to carjack him, pull him out, to beat him and his wife up. And I had a gun in my hand at the time, and I had four people around me with cinder block. And I had to protect my wife, the officers on the ground, and his wife. I chose not to shoot and kill everybody. I waited. That comes down to you and how you're trained and what's reasonable to you and how you perceive the threat, because it's not that it's not a threat. How do I get out of this? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes down to your mindset, what you plan for. And me and Mike talk about this all the time, especially in this time right now. We talk about visualizing all the time, you know, imagining something. Imagine this right now. And we talk about it all the time. Figure out, before you go to sleep tonight, go to sleep thinking, I'm going to get my car surrounded tomorrow. And then walk through, just before you fall dead asleep, walk through different scenarios in which you have positive outcomes, or maybe even that you have to shoot and still have a positive outcome. But so do shoot and no shoot in your head first so that you have a plan, because this stuff is real out there right now. This is real. There are some agitators. I've seen them. I mean, Antifa, whoever you want to call them, they are attacking folks, and they are making this thing really, really rough for police and citizens. Mm-hmm. And it's dangerous out there. So you got to walk through this.
And the one thing I would say is, and that is a very tough spot, because I can imagine, and I've seen these videos. I've seen tons of videos. And I don't know if you remember, but years ago there was, and I think it was in New York, where a car was a man and I think his wife and may have had a kid. I can't remember. But they got surrounded by a motorcycle gang.
Yeah, I remember that.
Same thing kind of happened. Yes. He ended up running some over because they started trying to get him to stop. And, you know, ever since then I've even thought about this, because that is a very, you know, today – right now, that's a very real scenario that could happen. And what it, to me, imminence is the big key to that. Because, and like Stan said, you all have to make your decision. We can't tell you in a situation like that what to do, because it's going to be based on imminence. In all these cases, you know, I had the same amount of, you know, I could have pulled the trigger a lot more times than I did as a police officer. But it came down to imminence of that moment of when you know you have no other options.
Absolutely.
The one thing I would say, though, is falling back on our use of force continuum for citizens, you have to know. So I know where, and I don't watch the news, but I still know where the protests are going on, because I still have a lot of contacts with the police department, and I still get texts and I still get information. But if you watch the news and if you keep up with what's going on, you know where these areas are going to be. So the number one thing is to stay out of that area, mm-hmm. to plan my day. You know, and in this last few days, it's really become a point of me to me to plan my day. If I'm coming downtown, I know I'm coming downtown in the morning, late morning, early afternoon, and then I'm back home. You have to know what's going on in your area. You have to know what areas around you have more trouble. And one of the things, if you haven't looked and if you don't know the area that you live in, crime rate stats, get online, look up crime rate stats, whatever city. Mm-hmm. Most cities now have a map. And you can click on a map, and it will show you the percentages. We have an app that we use that is Crime in Place that it actually shows you where you're driving. Now, it's based on data that is not like real lifetime data. But the websites that you go to, a lot of those are more up to date. So you can go and you can see this. So, and I know, you know, some of these people get caught in these situations and they don't have any other options. But if they would have put a little bit more thought into the planning of the day or their interactions or where they're going, would it have made a difference? I don't know. That's the one key that I say. You have to have a plan.
That's right.
And the plan mm-hmm. can't start with when my car gets surrounded.
Yeah.
The plan has to start with where can I avoid this mm-hmm. type of activity
on steroids, or something like this.
Mike is not just saying this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we live this every day. And, for instance, just last night, we decided to have dinner in Midtown, Oklahoma City. And we know downtown was the hotbed of violence with the protesters. We all carry guns, and no one in this organization plays around. We don't play. But we all got guns. And we still had to make a decision, okay, what time do we have to do it to get out of there before nightfall? Mm-hmm. You know, how close are we to where the hotbed is? You know, and then we had to really make a decision and debate whether or not we're going to move our dinner up north. Mm-hmm. That's a real decision mm-hmm. by people that don't have a problem using their firearms, but we too avoid.
And can we have dinner and avoid being caught up in a curfew?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Get out of there and go our way before we're all of a sudden – you know, the accidental lawbreaker.
That's right.
I wanted to speak to what both you guys were talking about as far as planning. I've got several buddies that do PSD, personal security details, PSD work. They've done, one of them has done a lot in Mexico, and you cannot be armed in Mexico. So they're doing PSD work for people, and they don't have the option to go to guns because they can't carry them. So the way they do their job is planning and contingencies and having, you know, all options and alternates and escape routes and things like that. And I mean, they do that every day, and they've been doing it successfully for years in a very dangerous place. But so I agree 1,000%. I was talking online and I said, look, if you find yourself in that spot where you have to choose between getting drug out and beaten to death, running through a crowd in your vehicle, or shooting people and hoping you survive long enough to get arrested before they kill you, you've pretty much already lost. Like, there are no good outcomes when you're in that spot. So all of your efforts should be directed to not getting in that, spot.
Yeah. And you know, in case in point, and somebody sent this to me, and I know you've seen it already, the bow and arrow guy.
Yeah.
I know you guys have seen this. If not, look it up. The bow and arrow guy against protesters. And, you know, he decided that he wanted to exercise First Amendment and say all lives matter, you know, during that time. And he got confronted, jumped out, and then confronted them with the bow and arrow, right? And see, a lot of these times, and we always talk about, man, stop pulling yourself into it. Because sometimes you paint yourself into your own corner. And then that corner you're going to have to shoot your way out of, it's not a good thing.
Circling back to the looter thing, we started that conversation, but we really didn't tie it up. We said don't use deadly force against a looter, someone coming in to steal your merchandise or what have you. That doesn't mean that you can't, under different circumstances, use force to defend your property. You can. You just can't use deadly force. So if someone's trying to come in to steal what's behind the counter, you can fight them. You can push them away. You can use other non-deadly weapons to stop that from happening.
Yes.
But at the point in time where you're not personally threatened, and certainly if you're not threatened with an imminent threat of great bodily harm or death, it has to stop. There's a point in time where you don't take the chance that you shoot somebody and it's viewed by the prosecutor as you were just defending your property. You took a life and you just can't.
And I'm going to jump on this too, because this keeps coming back. We always talk, Justin talks about it, me, Mike. Watch what you post. Because right now, this is an extreme emotional thing going on. And you saying that you're going to do this and do that on Facebook, your words will be used against you if you're forced to use self-defense. So watch that. I'm telling you.
Or if you have Alexa.
Who?
I said, or if you have Alexa.
Oh, Alexa's always listening.
Watch what you say. That's a whole nother.
Okay, no. We don't get into that yet, Mike. But, yeah, no, I'm so serious about that. You know, guys, be careful. I mean, the First Amendment is a double-edged sword. And you can say whatever you want. But if you follow through with a threat that you make, because I do this when I get into debates with members sometimes, because they want to discuss, you know, well, in this scenario, don't give me no scenario. Don't send that to me. You send me a message and say, hey, Stan, I would love to have a conversation with you, because they're not going to talk to you on the phone. But if you send me and you lock in some emails, they're discoverable. So don't do it. Sorry, that's my little soapbox.
I think and – you know, we've talked about it before. After it, this is a whole process. If you get into a shooting, whether it's a self-defense shooting or not, whatever happens, you know, they're going to start at the incident, at the time that firearm was fired, and they're going to start working backwards minutes and forward minutes. And they're going to work backwards hours and afterwards hours. Yep. They're going to work backwards months and afterwards months. And that's how the investigation works. And they're going to look, they're going to go back and they're going to look, what did you do right before? They're going to talk to witnesses, what happened right before the shooting. Then they're going to go back on social media and they're going to start looking at posts. What was posted? Was there any other previous interaction with these people? Then they're going to go back further and they're going to... go back in time, and they're going to do the same thing going forward. What do you do right after this? What do witnesses say what happened right after this? Did he call the police? What did he say to the police? Did he talk to investigators, and they're going to work forward?
Did he call for medical?
That's the whole thing that you have to think about. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get caught up. I get caught up in it all the time, too, when you get these personal, you know, somebody drives by and flips you off, and you're like, what did I do? And then, you're like, oh, okay, well, so he's going to – you have to think about these things and not engage. And we're going to have some video coming up soon, and we're going to look at, you know, one of the best things – that we provide hands down is Don and Sean's breakdown of mm-hmm. these cases mm-hmm. that come out. And we have what, about 8 to 10 of them maybe now? I mean, we've done it for several years.
Yeah, different groups, types of cases.
Types of cases mm-hmm. where they did wrong, where they did right, where they were convicted, where they weren't convicted. These are the things that you need to be reading, looking at, and go back in time if you haven't seen them and look at all these cases, because we've had people actually learn from these, and we've had the guy at his home when the guy, based off the Ted Wafer case. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read the Ted Wafer case, go to our website, click on the magnifying glass, type Ted Wafer, hit the magnifying glass, it'll throw you the whole thing. You can go through the whole case. And we actually had a member that, because he read that, he did the right thing, and nothing happened when he didn't go to prison for the rest of his life like Ted Wafer did. These cases, we're going to have some video coming out soon on these cases that we're going to go back and talk about some of them. And the one thing that, you know, there's a big difference between a violent attack or violent crime happening against a person and a person interjecting themselves into a crime, no attack, no incident at all of making an incident and then leading to a shooting.
The handicap parking incident.
Like, and we see, like the handicap parking. Mm-hmm. And we see, and you don't see a lot of these ones that are legitimate violent attacks or violent crimes because they're not newsworthy. Mm-hmm. Because they happen, they're done, and they wash out. The ones we do see are the ones like that, where people interject themselves. Okay, well, you can't do this, and it's a non. There's no complaint, even. There's no action being taken at all, other than playing music loud or parking in a spot. And those are the ones that make the news, and those are the ones that almost always end up bad for everybody involved. So, you know. That's one thing. It's easy to kind of get caught up in this and say, well, I think I would do this, or in the heat of the moment do this. But then you have to think your actions are going to be, and we know from being on the police department, they armchair quarterback those every Monday mm-hmm. morning all day long. And you have to think about that if you're, you know, going to be involved in something.
You know, Justin, you said that the best way to avoid that bad choice where there's no good outcome is of course not to get there to start with.
Yeah.
Right. And let's hope that people heed these words and they don't put themselves in a situation where the chances of that happening are great. But I still think talking about what happens if you wind up in that situation, what you've done to avoid precautions, that you wind up in the middle of it and have to make some of those decisions. Well, the rules don't really change. Yeah. It's not like it's a new standard of self-defense. The context is really weird. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to figure out, maybe, but it's still going to be the same test. Was there an imminent threat? Mm-hmm. It's going to be somewhat location dependent. And while it's not in your home, if it were in your home, you'd have much better protections than if it's in a parking lot. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if it's in your car, in a lot of places, you have more protections mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. you would out on the street, or sometimes, frankly, even in your business. Mm-hmm. An occupied vehicle is closer to your house than being in the parking lot, or sometimes in a business that's mm-hmm. open to the public. So that will factor in, I think, in how it's assessed. But it's going to boil down to, did you do mm-hmm. Were your actions reasonable under the circumstances as you perceived them? Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's going to require you, I think, to remain calm in a situation that is
going to be
far
massive
from
chaos.
Calm,
yep.
Not to react violently yourself by stomping on that gas pedal and running down three people that had no idea what was going on or any intent to bother you at all. We talk about self-defense sometimes as being too soon or too late. Mm-hmm. Did you shoot the robber in the back as he'd already completed the robbery and was trying to flee?
Correct.
Or did you shoot him because you were scared he might rob you, but he really hadn't done anything other than look at you funny?
Yes.
So all of that stuff is still going to factor in. And I saw those videos of the two police officers in the separate vehicles, and I know there was an outrage about it, and there were statements made and statements retracted and all of that. Neither of them tromped on the accelerator.
No, they did a
Nobody
really good
mowed
job.
Anybody down. And
they really did more of a push than a mow.
People were complaining, well, they should have just backed up. We don't know what was behind them or why they felt, and was their judgment moving forward reasonable? Thankfully, nobody was hurt seriously anyway. You have to almost look at it through their eyes, like we always analyze a self-defense case. And did you do something to increase your own risk? And I was being facetious, obviously, when I said earlier, well, you get outside and try to reason with people. We all know that what you don't want to do is something that will make you more vulnerable.
Absolutely. Don't
it's like when they're pounding on the door, you don't open the door to say, you know, what are you doing? Or like Ron Gasser. The fellow from Louisiana who got in the fatal shooting with Joe McKnight, football player, he rolled the window down. You know, that was a road rage thing. And pretty soon, even though Gasser was in his own car, and you could argue at the point that McKnight got out of his and came at him that he was the aggressor, but jury didn't jury did not agree, and Mr. Gasser's in prison for a long, long time. And I have to think part of it was is because he had lots of opportunities to avoid the conflict. And an interesting thing about that case, which is a fascinating case, is that McKnight had a gun in the car, not on him. He got out of the car to talk to Gasser about this road rage thing and wasn't armed.
You know, just to give you guys a couple of nuggets, though, from a tactical perspective, and not to play around, but I really do think, because I'm just thinking about this now, we need to, like, have just some props up here and stuff every once in a while, like cars and such, because I'm going to talk about this, like, you know, situational awareness. We always talk about situational awareness. Situational awareness should not just be when you're walking around. It should also extend to you driving as well. And that means paying attention to what's going on around you, okay? So what's happening in front of you. I mean, every time I stop, I always check my mirrors. Many people don't. They keep looking forward. I check my rearview mirror, see how close the guy behind me is. I look to my side mirrors to make sure there's nobody coming up on the side of me. You know, be I stopping at a busy intersection, or just watching. I mean, I can be on a wooded area and making sure that nothing comes out. You know, there's no ambushes happening. And like I said, not paranoid, always prepared. But when I'm driving, right? You're regular driving when you're not paying attention to anything. You pull way too close to people, right? You're right up on their bumpers. You're not paying attention because you listen to music. You're doing whatever. You're texting all this other bull crap. And what you really need to be doing is you set your car back purposefully about at least a car back. I don't care what anybody, you know, is doing behind you. You give yourself enough room so that you can maneuver if you have to and get through, you know, at a diagonal beyond other cars. I never like anybody pulling up on the side of me, and that's why I do not pull side by side with people. I make sure that I'm back far enough so that if there's room, that person pulls up above me so I can see the driver and the passenger in the cars to the right in front of me. And I always see what's happening behind me because when you keep your foot on I rest my hand on my parking brake, depending on which car I'm driving, my parking brake. And I just sit it there while I'm just waiting for the light, because if I have to jack it into reverse, I will. So jacking into reverse to get out of a sticky situation, you know, it's not something that you can't do or it's not doable. You just got to think about it. So you have to prepare yourself and you know, just think about these things that could happen to you and just work through it. I mean, it's all about training. And training is in the mind. Training is in your spacing, you know, being prepared. And be prepared to avoid sticky situations or dangerous situations.
Another little thing to go along with that is location. When you're driving, even if you know you drive the same same route every day or same area. Always when you're at a stop sign, just take a minute to mentally know what intersection you're at. Because if something happens all of a sudden and you have to call the police, most people aren't going to know where they're at, even if they're in an area where they know and are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Direction of travel. Things like that kind of go along with what Stan's talking about. And it's easy to do if you do it and to make it a habit. But, you know, as police officers, you're always checking your location because you never know when somebody is going to do something where you're going to have to jump out of the car and start running down the street. And you don't want to be that police officer that has to go to intersection and look at the street signs to tell dispatch where you're at,
yeah, that's
which
happened.
Has happened multiple times. So location's another.
Oh, absolutely.
Getting on like what Don was talking about, control of your vehicle. I agree. There's so many cases where if they just didn't roll the window down or open the door, probably would have had a totally different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes along with what Stan's saying, not getting up, you know, next to people.
Well, you know, we had a case we talked about, Sean and I, a motorist who was involved in a road rage kind of thing, and the guy behind him got out of the car to confront him,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the driver rolled the window down, and ultimately both guys had guns, shot each other, and they both died before it was all said and done. But we looked at that and decided from both perspectives, mm-hmm. right? The guy in the truck wasn't being aggressive. He was actually trying to say, my bad, I'm sorry I cut you mm-hmm. off. There happened to be an open cell phone line while some of this was going on, so we know a lot about it. And it's clear that the guy approaching the car, I mean, he had criminal intent most likely,
mm-hmm.
but as he was approaching to give him a piece of his mind or shake his fist or hit him or we don't know what, obviously he was armed, so he may have intended more. But from his perspective, rolling the window down, no doubt, was mm-hmm. viewed as an act of aggression, not conciliation, not, hey, my bad, sorry. It was probably, you want some of this,
mm-hmm.
and pretty soon, you know,
he
got some of that.
So the idea of rolling mm-hmm. the window down, even if you are going to say mea culpa,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
is not a good idea. You just,
yeah.
you get out of there, you stay safe, mm-hmm. you don't create an opportunity for these, in many cases, a tragic misperception of what's going on, of the dynamic.
Well, we talked about what I talked about earlier about what goes on afterwards. They're going to talk to witnesses. When witnesses see a car door opening, they may be pulling up as you're getting out of your car, and somebody else, and now you're the aggressor in their eyes. Because,
mm-hmm.
I pulled up, and this guy jumped out of his car and started yelling at this guy or whatever. You know, and we all know eyewitness accounts are – they vary on degree greatly of reliable, non-reliable.
Even when they tend to be truthful, even
right.
when they're trying to be accurate, mm-hmm. it's very unreliable evidence, ultimately.
Yeah, and people just mm-hmm. see things different. The three of us could probably watch an incident and see it the different ways. So that's just part of something that you have no control over that you're going to have to deal with if you do get involved in something. Yeah.
I wanted to go back to something Stan mentioned, talking about, think about this visualization like we always talk
mm-hmm.
about. And for me personally, like, I have certain lines of departure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this happens, then I can start thinking about the next thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Such as, you know, if I'm stuck, I'm going to try to de-escalate. Hands up, hey, man, chill out, relax, you
mm-hmm.
know, I'm with you, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if I can leave, I leave, back, forward, whatever. If they want to beat on my car, they can beat on my car. That's what insurance is for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything like that. For me, the line of departure is somebody breaks a window and comes into the car.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I'm going to do something. And it's all dependent on the situation. That may be hit the gas,
mm-hmm.
maybe bring the gun out, you know. But to me, that's the line.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
They can beat on my car. They can throw stuff at it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get out. I'm not going to engage. I'm not going to roll down the window. It's going to suck. And you're going to be out some money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's way cheaper than if you escalate something.
Yep.
And now you've got to deal with everything that comes after that.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, that's one thing when we talk about when we made this citizens' use of force continuum. That was exactly what we talk about when you always try to avoid and move out. You get to a point, like Justin said, that what this is doing is it's articulating your defense. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you don't, if somebody, you know, comes in a parking lot and starts, you know, coming towards you, and you get a barrier in between you, okay, and you tell them to stop. You know, we talked about removing the ambiguity, and they don't stop, and they keep coming. You put yourself in the car, and then you lock the door, and they beat the car, and they're smacking your window. They pull something out, try to break it, whatever, and then say they do gain access. They open the door. They reach into the car. Now you have shown a very good articulation of avoidance and the steps you took to try to avoid that situation. Mm-hmm. And then it gets down to, like Justin said, that, and that would be the line for me too. Mm-hmm. If somebody gets my door open, breaks a window, reaches in toward me, then that's when a decision is going to be made. And like I said, it may be the decision to just leave if you can. And you may not have that. You may be, you know, somebody may have, he may have pulled and blocked you in front of you. You may have somebody pulling up in the gas signs behind you. You may not be able to move. But that's when you have to make the decision on what you're going to do next. But if you take all the steps and maintain control on all those barriers, voice commands, mm-hmm. you know, control of a vehicle, control of windows, locks, doors, all that, that gives you great articulation if you do have to use force. And that's what the whole thing with the use of force continuum was built for, because we had to work with it as police officers. And it's not a use of force continuum. The police use of force continuum is not a cut and dry thing. It's a guideline, and it varies even from, you know, departments.
And then even talking about that, because, I mean, Mike makes an excellent point, and kudos to him, because, like, I've created curriculum for police departments. I've studied under, you know, because I've had to, you know, teach self-defense for police for so long that I've studied under the police use of force continuum. And when Mike came up with the idea of saying, you know what, triangle, but avoidance all the way around. And I said, wow, that's, you know, it's brilliant, because police don't even do that. And the problem with, you know, going by guidelines and models, sometimes mm-hmm. in your mind, you follow it. And right. and then you don't, you know, step away from, you know, because even cops, they might go too far and they say, well, my next step is this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm supposed to go to this next step and I'm supposed to shoot.
Instead of going laterally.
Yeah, instead of going left, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mentally going left, they have placed themselves in a corner as well. And, you know, and it happens with partners. It happens everywhere. You know, it's just so important to think about this. And we are, because we are friends with the chief here. I think I want to have a sit down with him to talk about, you know, changing that up, because, I mean, it is a guideline and they can change it, you know, to do things better and make things safer for themselves and for the citizens, you know, at hand. So, but, you know, you guys make sure, Justin, if you haven't done it yet, make sure they get this in the link, the copy of that, because I want y'all to study that. And the other thing that I want you guys to do, that we've harped on this before, for the past several months, Mike and I pleaded with you to come up with home plans. Now, mm-hmm. Recently, Antifa, right? Antifa mm-hmm. came up with a threat stating that they're gonna, you know, you're gonna call them terrorists, you know, from the president calling them terrorist organization, that they're gonna walk away from the cities and now hit the suburbs. I wouldn't take these things lightly, although I don't think they have the manpower or the group, you know, to just go to every suburb that's around there, but you don't want it to be yours. And what I mean by that is always prepare a plan for your family for home invasions. Mm-hmm. If somebody tries to take advantage of the situation, because it could easily happen, or others that are just opportunists and who are burglars and such, you got all the police concentrating on protecting their own structures at this time, you know, City Hall, police departments, that's where everybody is. Mm-hmm. They're protecting to keep them getting burnt down. Criminals have a free rein right now, because the not many 911 calls are going to be answered when everybody's trying to deal with protesters and walk, you know, protesters, rioters, and such. So think about it this weekend. Make a plan for you and your family. Promise yourself that you're going to make a plan and you're going to work through it if somebody comes into the house.
Of course, be prepared, be vigilant. Don't be paranoid, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. And by doing those things, you'll create a safety zone around yourself so that you'll have the time to react appropriately. At the same time, you may be scared that Antifa or some other nebulous group, I don't even know what Antifa is, whether it's actually a thing or just a loose collection of people that want to, you know, destroy things at any given moment. But nonetheless, let's be sure that if someone's knocking on your door, that it's not somebody who's lost and looking to find where the protest is or what have you. You know, you have to flavor all of this with reasonableness, and the way you do that is by having enough time, which means enough safety, enough distance, whatever it is, to be able to really analyze what's going on. And frankly, whether you're in your car and you're surrounded with people, or whether in your home and someone's knocking on the door, it's much the same analysis. You know, we talked about earlier, there are protesters, which I think by definition mean not a threat. And I don't think the police consider the occasional water bottle lobbed in their direction to be a physical threat, although it's a crime. And if it hit, it could be actually a serious crime. On the other hand, people that are agitators are trying to incite violence. They're they're acting violently. You toss a brick in the direction of a police officer, you have a whole different situation. You know, most every state has a throwing a deadly missile statute. And sometimes that's throwing a, you know, a brick at a cop. It could be dropping a brick off the bridge on the highway. That stuff just absolutely can't be tolerated. And I'm actually pretty impressed with much of the response that I'm seeing on TV. The and we talked that about our own concealed carriers. You have to be the calmest guy in the room. You have to be the guy willing to take some crap before you react. And I think for the most part, some of what I've seen is exemplary. Lot more patience and regard. And it does seem to be working in many respects. So then we talked about the looters, which I think are just criminal opportunists, maybe criminals for the day. They may have just decided, here's my chance to. So it's a difficult, difficult situation.
Well, I think we're seeing something. We're seeing something I've never seen before. I remember I was just out of high school when the L.A. riots went down, and I remember watching that. And then we saw Ferguson in Baltimore. But to me, this is different. It just feels different. I've never seen so many cities, and I've been glued to this stuff. Probably 8 or 10 hours a day. Either watching live, like I was watching a live stream when the mob breached the third precinct in Minneapolis. That was surreal. This is a police building. And I watched, there was a video out there of them. It looked like the fall of Saigon. They had to bust their gate down with a cruiser, and they, there's a, you know, some guys were running on foot. It was like a Mogadishu mile in Minnesota. And they're getting pelted with rocks and bottles.
Well, you know what's significant about that example right there? It falls back on what you said, you know, lines of tactical retreat. Okay. Because even that police department, because I think it was tactical officers up top on the roof, they had to decide and weigh out, do we stand our, I don't want to say stand our ground, I hate using that. Do we continue to, you know, protect this fortress, protect our fort at any cost, to include shooting into the crowd to stop people, or, you know, pinpointing them. I mean, of course, they could do that. Or do we abandon this and then wait to fight another day? And sometimes you have to think just like that. You know, you say, okay, you got me here. This is the best course of action for right now in this moment, okay, to get me out of danger and to keep me from taking a life unnecessarily. Find out what your lines are. Know your lines and have a plan for you and what you're going to do with your family.
Going to, speaking to the station, what I've seen numerous places, and one of the factors that played into, and they got the word from higher to pull out of that precinct. As far as I know, it was not a local decision. But one of the factors that I've read was a factor, and keep in mind this is all fluid, so who knows, but was that they had ran out of less than lethal munitions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they were down to, we always talk about give yourself options,
that's
give
right.
yourself space to mm-hmm. make decisions.
Yeah.
Well, they just had one of their biggest option removed off the table because they were out of it.
Correct.
So now you're down to two things. You either go hands-on
yeah.
with a mob, or you go with live ammo.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. can. And then, you know, and that comes back down to, and we're talking about police departments versus citizens, but it's still planning.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to one of the guys here that, you know, runs the, he's on the SWAT, and mm-hmm. he runs Less Lethal. And, man, he just lucked out. He told me, he said, you know what, Stan? He says, I lucked out because when I ordered, you know, all the beanbag rounds and the rubber bullets and all this stuff that to prepare us for something like this, we never knew this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but I ordered a year and a half's worth. Yeah. He said, I wanted to order extra. So this is what is my first time I ever ordered extra.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good plan, even if it was a, you know, a happy little accident. But now they have it in place that don't F around in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
That's because you're going to catch one,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, because they are prepared for the long haul. And, you know, I mean, it comes down to planning. You have to plan right with these things. And I still, like you said, it's fluid, and I don't know all the details mm-hmm. of what happened with Third Precinct, but I still don't understand why they had no backup available. I don't know where everybody else was not to come in and save like those officers.
That was the second night that it had went down. Wednesday, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, they lost a 6-story condo building. It was just a raging inferno, big fires, and it got to the point where the fire department couldn't respond anymore because every time they would go somewhere and try to put out a fire, they would be attacked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they pulled back, and then so now it was a free-for-all with fires and everything else and looting going on, and they were still trying to engage on Wednesday, and then, you know, it settled down in the morning. And then Thursday, it just ramped up to 11 again.
Yeah.
And the precinct became just a focus, and it was just getting worse and more violent and more violent. And like Wednesday night, you talking about, Don, talking about the restraint and the calmness that we're seeing out of, you know, a lot of people, but specifically a lot of police officers. Mm-hmm. There was a line of state troopers
mm-hmm.
In front of this precinct before they abandoned it on Wednesday night. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, man, I feel so bad for those. That's the worst job I could think of.
Yeah.
You're standing there mm-hmm. in front of a riot and one dude on a roof with a rifle, you're done. You're a target. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've got soft armor on. There's yeah. nothing saving you, you know, if somebody wants to do this. And so, you know, they got the balls to stand there. And on top of that, everyone on this line is just calling them everything in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. just every and trying to incite them
yeah.
to come over. And it was just, you know, that's to me, that says a lot. I mean, we've seen some things, if you watch a lot of stuff, you know, where maybe they should have shown more restraint and
yeah.
didn't. But overall, I mean, I think, you know, to me, I don't fault the rank and file dudes for what I'm seeing out there at all. Most of them mm-hmm. are doing a great job.
They really are. And, I mean, what would you do if you had to face a riot?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like there is no right answer. You know, you can only do your best, especially in that crazy situation where law enforcement is also charged to protect protesters. So mm-hmm. they have mm-hmm. to walk with them. You know, I remember back in the 90s when – and I just couldn't believe it. Like, this is a real thing in Oklahoma City in the 90s on the east side – where there was a KKK parade. And so we had to protect them. And I go, this seems so weird for me protecting these dudes in these hoods. It just doesn't seem – it was surreal.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we hear all of the stuff, and then I'm being verbally attacked by the citizens over there, you know, mm-hmm. on the African-American side of town for protecting them. But I'm charged to – it's my job, right?
Yeah.
I can't put politics in front of my duty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're citizens as well, you know. And, I mean, it's just crazy what's going on right now. Everybody needs to keep your heads. And I mean, I swear part of dealing with something like this and what's going on with all of us collectively is your mental health. Take mm-hmm. some time away from the news as well. And,
100%.
You know, watch a comedy. Do something. Go walk the park with your wife and your kids. Because mental health is very important. And as we continue to push these things into our heads, don't think that anxiety is not going to be raised in all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, your anxiety raises, and I wouldn't be surprised if because of this month that we've had, these past couple of months, that you had to deal with some PTSD-type situations in the near future.
Yeah. But protect yourself. Some undercurrents of rage, anger, helplessness. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people have been out of work for 2 or 3 months?
Exactly.
And they're already close.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have something as tragic as what happened to George Floyd on video where you can disagree depending on your perspective and how you analyze it and what level of crime was it, that sort of stuff. But you can't look at that with the guy in his with his hands in his pocket looking around and not have an emotional response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what, aren't we dealing with really, an emotional response? The intellectual, academic, scholarly, legal analysis is much further down the road.
Well, I mean, for me, Floyd is, that was the match. We've had everything piling up for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, multiple things, COVID, you know, just this whole thing has been piling up for a decade or more, I think. And Floyd was the spark.
It was. And then, you know what's interesting, also interesting about this case? We as citizens of the world had to deal with whatever you want to call it, real or not. We still had to deal with the fallout of COVID-19 and the response by all of our governments on what they wanted to do, locking in place and stuff like that. The thing about when everyone of all walks of life and color are forced to be in the same situation, you find yourself almost like a victim of, you know, of being like a hostage, you know, situation. So you create a bond with one another. And I went last summer, I went to New Zealand. Never heard of it before. I mean, I've heard New Zealand, but, you know, never wanted to travel there. And it's beautiful land. It's like 20-something hours away. It's on the other side of the world. I went there for a vacation back for Thanksgiving. And spotted, when I'm talking about people with my same camouflage, I couldn't find. If you look up New Zealand, the population of blacks there, there is none. It doesn't even rank. But in New Zealand, they are protesting. Thousands and thousands of people are protesting over this case here in the United States on the other side of the world where there are no black people legitimately. You don't want to be that guy that sparks violence around the nation because of your piss poor decision, right? You don't want to be that guy. Don't be him. And on talking about that, because recently I've been talking to cops and stuff about your duty to protect, right? And what I mean by that, duty to protect your partner against himself, right? And that means that if you got a partner that is all riled up and he carries a gun and you're with him, don't allow your partner to make stupid decisions as a citizen. Don't let him pull his gun out when he shouldn't. Don't let him step out of the car. You know, it is your duty to protect your friend and your family member from walking into the worst thing they'll ever do in their lives.
Takeaways?
That was mine.
Yeah. Good one.
I think mine is just the planning. You know, you have to have a daily plan of where you're going to be, what you're going to be doing. You know, understanding your surroundings, understanding where hot spots are, and avoiding those, and not being put in there. And another thing I think that goes along with this, I tell my daughters this. You know, don't let anybody pull you. Don't let anybody ruin your day. You know, just because somebody or you cut off somebody or somebody cuts off you and gets all riled up, don't let them pull you into that, because that's part of your planning too. You have to plan to, you know, get through each day without getting pulled into somebody else's anger, and just have a planning of what to do. But avoidance, you know, plan to avoid best you can, and then, you know, have a plan if you can't do that.
Don?
Yeah, you know, it's time for some empathy and some sympathy, and you may completely disagree with what you see and how people are expressing their anger and their frustration. And there are clear lines that you just can't cross. And we've mm-hmm. talked about those lines, what you have to do to protect yourself when you are faced with that kind of threat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's pretty rare in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And like Mike says and Stan, don't contribute to that. Take a step back. Avoid situations where you have to make decisions that you don't want to have to make ever. Try to put yourself in the shoes of the other people, maybe not by agreeing with them, but at least understanding where some of that is coming through. And what's the old cliche from the 70s? You know, be part of the solution, you know, not mm-hmm. not part of the problem.
My takeaway would be kind of two things. One, we've talked about it. We always talk about it. Have the plan, visualize beforehand. The more time you have to make a decision, chances are the better decision you're going to make, and it's going to give you more options. So distance equals time, you know, planning. If you can go right or left and right looks a little sketchy, go left. Or just don't go there at all. Turn around, go home. The other thing is don't find yourself in a situation, you know, where you find yourself potentially in a fight over something that's $1,000 or two, you know, because that escalates. Now your life is different. Mm-hmm. And how many cases have we seen? Property, music, you know, something completely inconsequential. Yeah.
Something when there isn't all this swirling around us was enough to trigger an irrational response, an unreasonable response resulting in the death.
Yeah.
Now we're a lot closer to that being the state of the
day. Everybody's ramped up.
Yeah.
And that was my final point is, and Stan spoke this as well, mental health is extremely important, especially, you know, we just came through an unprecedented event with COVID. We're not even through it yet, really, in some states. But, you know, you've got, you take a person's job away from them to where they don't know how they're going to feed their family. Mm-hmm. And you start adding all this up, dangerous times.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can, take care of yourself. Don't watch the media, man. You know, you can watch the news to get the information you need, but pick, you know, don't listen to their opinion because that's what they're selling you. You know, they want to sell you their, they don't want to tell you what happens anymore. They want to tell you what they think mm-hmm. of their version of what happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't buy into that. Make your own decisions. If you want to dive into it, try to find the source documents and all that stuff. But there's a, one of the biggest industries in the world is media, and they are not coming at this to help you. They all have agendas, different sides, whatever, pick it. But just don't get wrapped up in it. You know, take care of your family, take care of yourself.
Let's not forget this is an election year, too.
Yes.
Which makes it even more volatile, more inflammatory, more agenda-driven.
Oh, it's just going to get worse. Yeah. Yep. Close but that's up, all Mike. I got.
All right, guys. Jacket in reverse.
Jacket in reverse.
Be safe. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Bye, guys.
So long.
Mike, did you hit your button down there? I got to move those off.
Ah.